Hello, everybody. Dr. Lonnie Stewart here from the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. Are you a physical therapy student about to start studying for the National Physical Therapy Examination? Or maybe you're a professor, a program director, or a clinical instructor who teaches DPT students preparing for the NPTE? Either way, we would recommend checking out our sponsor, NPTE Final Frontier, and the community they've built around preparing for and succeeding on the NPTE. That exam and the preparation that goes along with it can be long, tedious, difficult, and stress-inducing, but it doesn't have to be. NPTE Final Frontier has the tactics and resources to help address all of the usual barriers. They even have scholarships to help with NPTE study courses, FSBPT registration fees, and even research opportunities. And if that's not enough, they're even donating to the very first annual HET Podcast Scholarship to be awarded at the end of every year. Go to npteff.com for all of the details and use code HET for 10% off all purchases. Links to both the NPTE Final Frontier and their scholarship options are available in the show notes. And now, let's get ready to learn.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. F. Scott Feel, and I've got with me today very special guest. You may know him as the OG sneakerhead of the physical therapy world, Dr. Drew Contreras. Drew, thanks so much for coming on, man. How you been?
I'm good, man. My pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I mean, your footwear game is top-notch, second to none. I think the PT world... Yeah, the PT world is on notice for sure. One of the things that we're going to dive into today is just leverage. I think that was my one big takeaway from CSM this year was just the word leverage. And knowing that the profession can be leveraged in a bunch of really good ways. And, you know, you happen to be one of the people that have done it very well. For context, tell a little bit about your background and like your educational background and how it's led you to where you are today.
So started my PT journey, right, immediately after undergrad. And then this was, you know, in 19, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, same.
Other, yep. Right. So, you know, at the time, master's degrees in PT were not a requirement, right? But I knew that my professional aspirations were to be good at what I do. And I felt like that needed to be part of my journey, right? So I pursued that right out of the gate. And I went to a little Catholic program called Gannon University. And one of the reasons I went there was every member of their faculty was board certified specialists. So I knew that I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, but I knew that I would at least be working with people who had done it in clinics. And that was why I chose that school and that pathway. Right. And then so after that, you know, I was commissioned in the military and was an Army PT, did my whole and I guess, you know, I call it the front nine of my career, right, in the military. And during that system, one of the things that was really appealing and kept me in that system was there was constantly opportunities to evolve yourself as a clinician. Right. They have their own advanced training pathways. They have programs for advanced training in musculoskeletal imaging. They had their own residency programs, right? Eventually, I didn't take one of those residency programs, but I went ahead and did the DPT program at Chapel Hill while I was stationed in North Carolina. Again, recognizing that like I felt like it was the right pathway for me to go down. And I think that has kind of been my educational journey up until the point where I kind of am today.
Yeah, I had a similar journey, right? When I was there, it was a master's program at East Carolina University, actually. Mm-hmm. But we were the first year they offered the transitional doctorate. And I was like, well, it seems like this is where the profession's heading. I should probably just stick around and do it. And I started it there at ECU and ended up, life got in the way. My dad passed away. I ended up not finishing it before the window closed. But then I did finish it eventually, the transitional doctorate at St. Augustine. And then I ended up also going on to get an EDD, right? And that was a whole nother rabbit hole that we don't have time to get down today. But you hit a major point there that I want to dive into. And you mentioned the evolution of growth and the evolution of a career path and a journey, right? And I think that's important for the next generation to realize is that A, the profession of PT is evolving and it always will, right? Change is inevitable. But personally, you have the opportunity to evolve. And one of the cool ways that you did it was by seeking out opportunities for growth, right? So talk us through a little bit about the evolution and the pathways that it took you after you kind of did that.
I think that one of the things that people struggle with, right, is, and I see this at this point in my career where I mentor young people, you know, people who are cutting their teeth in the profession, looking to kind of get a foothold and aren't quite sure. I think a lot of people, the approach has been, if I just do good in high school, I'll get into college. If I just do good in undergrad, I'll get to grad school. If I just get this piece of paper and this license, then I'm done. And the unfortunate portion of that is like, no, you just started. Like, that just gets you in the game, right? And it's the same concept for a lot of professional athletes is a great example, right? Like, people assume that, like, once you get into the league, you're there, you've arrived, right? Like, no, that just means you showed up. Like, you haven't even started. And that's where I think people struggle with it, because they haven't been mentored to understand that, like, you just showed up. Right? Like, you've got a long way to go if you want to thrive in the profession. Like, if you just want to check a box and like make a paycheck and then kind of, you know, do your thing and get out, like, that's fine. I'm never going to judge you for it. Like, doesn't matter to me. But like, I don't think that you will find professional growth and thriving if that's your approach, right? You have to find ways to put yourself in a position professionally where you can pursue the things that interest you, or even if it doesn't interest you, something that will make you better, right? There are times where I've had to pursue things because I didn't, like, I'm going to be the first one to tell you, like, I hate neuro stuff. I'm not good at it. I barely understand it, but I just spent time and energy getting smarter at it, because eventually I realized, yeah, lots of stuff's neuro problems that I didn't understand. Right. So I had to get better at it, even though it wasn't something I was passionate about, but it made me a better clinician. Right. And so to get good at what you do, you just have to accept that there are steps along this process that you're going to have to pursue. And that the reality of is nobody's going to do it for you. Nobody cares. Right. And maybe that's a little harsh for me to say, but like, if you are not interested in investing in your career pathway, you should not expect other people to invest in it for you.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of a thing we talk about on here a lot, and that's the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? Like, you think you know everything, then you get there to the league, if you will, and you're like, oh, I actually know nothing. And it just drops all the way back down again. And that, in theory, should fuel you to push toward mastery again, which, again, we may never get to mastery, right? We never may be the Michael Jordan of the thing. But at least you're on that journey and that path of striving towards it. And at some point along the way, at the very least, you become pretty darn good at it, right? Hopefully you reach those expert and authority levels because you've taken the time to push and excel and try to make yourself better, right? Because like you said, nobody's coming to save you. Nobody's going to do it for you. Nobody, you have to do the reps. No one else can do the reps for you, right?
And the thing that I love, like, as we talk about how things have changed, how the profession is evolving, it reminds me of a line from Goodwill Hunting where, like, you know, they're somewhere and he's like, yeah, you spent 4 years and $200,000 getting information that you could have got for $2 in late fees from a library. Yep. Right? Like, everything you want to know is somewhere.
Yep.
And most of it's pretty inexpensive now, right? Like, just listening to podcasts like this, just going on to where people are freely sharing information. It is so easy to get information now, right? Now you have to be selective about what information you're uptaking, right? But the possibilities of you pursuing, challenging yourself to be better, right, are pretty easy to do compared to the process years ago, right? So I think then that pathway, because it's readily available, sometimes feels cheap. Right. So it's like a lot of things, right? Like, well, if it's cheap, what's wrong with it?
Right.
Right. Like, well, just because you didn't spend $80,000 a year doesn't mean that, you know, you didn't get a quality bit of information, you know, on a weekend course or spending some time working with somebody in their clinic. Right. So I think that understanding that the information's available for you to pursue that, but again, it has to come from your desire to continue that, to leverage it, what's available for you, and go out and get it.
Yeah. And I think that kind of brings me to my next point of, like, I always tell students when they come to me and ask, you know, hey, is PT still worth it? Like, is that still a good profession? You know? And I'm like, well, it is if you leverage it appropriately, right? Like, I firmly believe that a typical 9-to-5 clock in, clock out therapist is not going to succeed if they have $200,000 worth of student loans and they're making $75,000 out of the gate. I just feel like it's going to be a struggle. It's going to be an uphill battle, right? So we as physical therapists, luckily, we are in the age of information. It's all out there, right? We happen to have some pretty good knowledge and background and training, especially when it comes to the musculoskeletal system, right? We're in theory movement experts, right? So there's a million ways to leverage that and a million ways to do things with that. You just got to find the one that ignites you and it makes you passionate, and then follow that and lean into that. And it's okay to pivot and move and change. But, like, once you have a pretty good North Star to go off of, well, now we're starting to be able to find our zone of genius, lean into it, and stay on that path towards mastery until we are fulfilled, essentially.
Yeah. And another thing that I think you're going to see, so people a lot of times think, like, all right, well, I got this degree, and I'm in this field, and I have a license. And with that, I am limited to doing it in this strip mall clinic, in this hospital, in this nursing home, in this school system. And the thing that really I think is interesting is that if you really look at what you learn throughout the course of your education as a physical therapist, yeah, you learn anatomy, you learn all that stuff, right? But what you really learn is two things. You learn pattern recognition, right? You learn how to look at something and go, this isn't supposed to look like this, right? It's supposed to be different. Maybe you're not exactly sure what you're looking at, but you know it doesn't look like what it's supposed to look like, right? And you learn how to deal with human beings, right? Like, no matter what it is you do, you deal with humans. And you typically deal with humans on not their best day. And so if you think about that, like, what does that translate to? What careers require you to deal with humans that are probably not at their best and also require pattern recognition, right? And the truth is, like, that is the definition of executive management, right? It is dealing with people who may or may not be having their best day, right? And then looking at things and finding patterns in the chaos of what are we looking at? Identifying the pattern, and then surrounding yourself with smart people to help you have a solution for the pattern. But you're not the one with all the answers, right? But pattern recognition is what's important. And so what people fail to understand is that, like, you're actually set up to be so successful at so many things, but we limit ourselves because we're like, well, I'm supposed to, like you said, like, I'm supposed to work my 45 hours at the strip mall clinic, slinging patients on the plinth, and that's all I do. Like, look, that's a great place to start, right? Absolutely. And I implore anybody, when you get your license and you graduate your program, right, I think there's nothing better for you professionally than to spend some time slinging patients in whatever setting that is, right? Because if you skip that step, you'll never go back and do it. Like, you'll never, if you skip it, it's going to be very hard for you to humble yourself to come back to, I'm here going to grind it out, right? Because in addition to treating patients, you learn all those skills about dealing with humans, dealing with their problems, understanding them, learning how to communicate with them, but then also, what kind of patterns am I seeing? What kind of patterns am I seeing on this individual? What kind of patterns am I seeing in the clinic? What kind of patterns am I seeing in my community? What kind of patterns are we seeing across the field? What kind of patterns are we seeing across the profession, right? Those things of learning how to see that will make you so successful in life if you allow it to just kind of inform you and educate you along your pathway. And so not leveraging that capability of having to do that is, I think, a big mistake that a lot of new graduates make.
Yeah. I mean, even just getting through a DPT program teaches you time management, prioritization, the soft skills, right? personality management and like interacting with other students, other professors, other healthcare professionals, right? Like learning how to network and socialize in the sandbox and play nice with everyone, right? Like you're learning all of these skills throughout the program. Oh, and then by the way, you graduate and end up with a piece of paper that says you can now go practice, right?
Yep.
But all those other skills can be transferred to other things like upper management, right? Like, you know, CEO type level stuff, you know? I mean, and those are all skills that those successful people need. So it's just changing the mindset a little bit and the you know, how we frame things. Because we did, we just interviewed a hospital CEO who is a physical therapist not too long ago, right? Like we can do those things. We have, and I think a big part of it too, and I'll ask you this next then is, I'm not a huge believer in luck, right? I feel like you work really hard for a really long time. And when the opportunities present themselves, you're ready to pounce on them because you work really hard for really long, right? Like you see those patterns, you can jump on them and you know, make the most out of them. So tell us a little bit about some of the opportunities that you've had by leveraging your career in the profession.
Right. So an interesting thing about me is that, you know, as like I said, I spent the majority, well, the whole front nine of my career, right, in the military. Right. And so, you know, I got the luck, right, if you want to call it luck, of getting to spend 15 months in a sandbox, you know, in Iraq. Which I don't know that luck is the right word I would call it, right? Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about that opportunity was it made me really, really good at treating people by myself and with limited resources and being able to be mobile, right? Being able to kind of just rely on my brain more than anything. Like I had limited things to work with, right? But then what happened is, so I come out of that experience basically being able to work anywhere in the world out of a backpack, because that's what I had done, right? That skill set transferred incredibly well to a position, you know, working at the White House. And the reason for that is, you know, you think, well, it's the White House and you have everything, right? Like everything's a relative term, right, in that world, right? Like, the joke of that place is, you know, it's lovingly called the 18 acres, right? But there's no more acres within there, right? There's no more space to be had, right? And there's no room to add things, right? So, you know, I'm working there, I end up working basically out of a closet at best, right? But with a bag, right? I have a bag. And me being able to treat people with a bag makes me very portable, right? Which makes me very useful for something where the operation is constantly moving around, right? So now I'm following around a guy around the world with a bag, right? And that skill set, right, made me prepared for that, right? And so I think that it's just important to understand that, like, as you develop a skill or you have these opportunities, right, there's no luck involved in it.
And now for a quick shout out to our newest sponsor, Varela Financial. If you're a physical therapist and you have student loan debt, you got to talk to these guys. What makes them unique is that they view financial planning like running hurdles on a track. And for PTs, the first hurdle many of us run into is student loan debt. Varela Financial will help you get over that hurdle. They not only take the time to explain to you which plans you individually qualify for and how those plans work, but they also take the time to show you what your individual case looks like, mapped out within each option. So if you're looking for help on your student loan debt or any area of personal finances, we recommend working with them. I use Varela Financial personally, and they were able to help me lower my student loan repayment from about $1,800 a month down to about $135 per month simply by finding the right repayment plan that best fit me, my family, and our life goals. You can check them out at VarelaFinancial.com. Link is in the show notes if you need it for reference, and tell them the HET podcast crew sent you. And now back to the show.
Right. It was lots of work, lots of being really good at what you do. And when there's an opportunity, right, you do it and you just do the best you can. Right. And then again, there's no luck involved in it. It's being prepared and having put in the work when the opportunity arises. Right. And then also understanding, like, there will be more opportunities. Right. The one bit of advice that I would love to share with people, right, that I got was that, you know, if somebody ever offers you an opportunity and you are not prepared, right, you're not ready, the worst thing you can do is jump in at it, right? If you know in your heart of hearts you're not ready, right? Because you know you're not going to do well, right? But if that opportunity will come again, if you continue to prepare for it, the opportunity will arise again, right? And so I've experienced that numerous times. After I got that bit of advice, I didn't understand it when I was younger, right? That, like, you know, I had applied for residency programs and I didn't get selected, right? And I was really crushed by it, you know, at that point in my career. Like, what had I not done? How was I not a good candidate, right? I felt very, very, you know, it bothered me professionally, right? But like, they were like, you just need to keep preparing, and the opportunities will come when you are ready, because then people will see that you're a good candidate for it if you continue to prepare. So that's what I did. I just kept working at it. I just kept working at my craft, kept, you know, just trying to be better at it. And then when the opportunity came, and they're like, hey, look, you're pretty good at what you do. Here's an opportunity that you never thought would ever, that nobody ever thought would have, it never existed. But because I was prepared, because of my having no luck, right, and not being selected, right, I wasn't selected because I wasn't prepared at the time, right? So again, I think that that's just something we need to understand, that, like, you have to continue to kind of grind it out, put the work in, and then when the opportunity comes, people will call it luck. People will say, oh, you're lucky. Oh, you're so lucky you got that opportunity. Oh, that just happened. Because no, there's no luck involved. I was prepared and somebody recognized it.
Yeah, right. The overnight success that took 10 years.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, you hear those like cliche phrases, but it's like when the student's ready, the teacher or opportunity will present themselves, right? And I think that's exactly right. Like, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's just like, yeah, you just do the thing really well as long as you can. And when they present themselves, then you're ready, you know? And it may not look exactly the same as the first opportunity, but maybe better, maybe slightly different. But I think the big takeaway for me from what you just said was all these things are translatable to that next opportunity, right? So every skill set that you've stacked, you know, by skill stacking over those years, you took those new skills with you each opportunity you had, and you just keep getting better and better and better and broader and broader. And, like, you know, you have more knowledge and more skills and more time and reps and more of the pattern recognition, so that the next opportunity, you're able to be ready for it and kind of, you know, loop yourself into it. So I guess then my next question, Drew, becomes like, all right, if I'm a physical therapy student and I'm about to head out into the real world, right, and start working, and I want to try to leverage my knowledge and my experience and you know, realize I'm just now starting, you know, what should I do to prepare myself? How should I work on myself in order to get ready to leverage these opportunities that might come my way?
I mean, I think that's a good thing. I think that people want to know, like, well, how many hours am I supposed to put in? How many things am I supposed to go to? How many weekend stuff should I expect to do, right? The answer is, like, there's no concrete answer, right? Except it's probably more than you think, right? That's my answer. It's more than you think it is, right? If all you want to do is punch a clock, right, and like, look, these are the hours I'm going, this is all I'm going to do, like, I'm going to be honest, right, like, that's not a doctor, right? There's no doctor, right? Nobody with a title doctor thinks that that's what their career is supposed to be, is 37 and a half hours a week, you know, with my 30-minute breaks. And, like, no, you've chosen a profession. You're a professional, right? Act like it, yeah. Right? Like, so start there, right? But I think once you move past that portion of understanding that, like, well, it's more, right? You need to do more than just your job if you want career success and growth. There's also the other side of it that, like, I have seen where people then have no boundaries on their lives, right? And that is even worse, right? That's worse than not being willing to do more. Yeah. That is a detriment, right? Because you will just work yourself into the ground. You'll have no expectations of balance, of enjoyment, of remembering why you pursued this in the first place, right? and then you'll be out of the profession in a couple of years, right? Like, so there's the, you need to do more than you think, but you don't need to go so far that you can't find time to, you know, meet up with your friends to go to a concert, right? Or have dinner with somebody, right? Or go see your parents, you know, on a weekend, right? Or go to your sibling's high school graduation. Like, that's not a plan for success, right? And it's super easy to get sucked into that, right? And a lot of times people who are successful, you know, perceives that they're successful have done it because they have burned the margin on that end, right? They've done all these things. I've gotten these advanced degrees. I've been in these programs. I've pushed everything, all my essence into this bucket, right? And then you meet them and you're like, man, that's a miserable individual. Man, that is not somebody I want to have a beer with at the meeting. Like, that is not somebody fun to be around. Like, so there's a happy place in the middle there, right? And I think that's what people struggle with. And if you don't know what that looks like, find somebody who's done it and ask them and talk to them, right? Because anybody who's doing it that you perceive is doing it well, right, it will have that conversation with you.
I see that a lot in entrepreneurs, actually. Like, they work so hard at the business and they climb their way up there, but they're working so many hours and working so hard and are so obsessed with it that they burn out and they burn relationships and bridges and all that. And it's not worth it, right? You need that balance. And I think, you know, it really becomes a matter of the way to scale best and the way to get the most out of yourself is knowing those healthy boundaries and knowing the correct things to say no to, right? Because we all got this far by being relatively high achievers, right? And wanting to please everyone, say yes to everything, all the things. And that's good early on. I think you need to taste test and try things. But as you get better and better and you really hone in on that North Star and the journey you have to take to get there, that makes it easier to then say, yes, this is going to support me and move me forward toward accomplishing my North Star, or no, this is going to pull me away and deviate me away from the North Star. Then you now have a guideline, an anchor, if you will, to kind of, you know, utilize that compass and realize what's a yes and what's a no, right? And I think, you know, to me, that comes with time and trial and error and figuring it out, but definitely you don't want to go, you know, too hard, too fast and burn yourself out, because that's a major problem in the healthcare professions, all of them right now, right? So like the last thing we need to do is more burnout, you know? So, right. You know, I think it becomes definitely I think the big takeaway there for me is knowing yourself, right? Knowing what you do need and where your skills need to be built up and being honest about it, right? Like, it's okay. Yes. Like you said, it's okay to not be great at neuro. That's fine. Yeah. Either shy the hell away from it or lean into it and learn it, right? Like, you know, pick which way you want to handle that, but you got to know yourself and you got to be honest with yourself about
it. And being honest with yourself, right, is hard, right? It's a difficult thing. It takes growth. It takes maturity, right? To just be able to look in there and be like, man, you need to work better at this, right? You need to some more, right? And again, I think that, anybody who's in a PT program, right, didn't get there because you don't belong there, right? Like, there's a lot of things to keep people out of PT school, right? And if you end up there, you have what it takes, right? And so, but when you transition to the workforce, right, it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, if you are there, you have made it past whatever interview process, whatever selection process, you belong there, right? Like, you may have work to do, but you belong there. And it's okay, like you said, to be honest with yourself and be like, hey, I've got some room for growth here, but I'm in. Like, now I have to start working.
Yeah, that's such a key thing to think about especially as a new grad, because you're not expected to be an expert. You're literally a safe practicing individual. That's all you are. You're a licensed entry-level practitioner who is safe to go practice in the real world. That's it. That's all we expect of you. Are you entry level? Are you safe? Okay, you're good to go. Now, you know, and again, cliche type phrase, but they call it the practice of medicine, right? Because we're practicing things as we get better and as we grow. And I love the way you frame that in, hey, look, it's okay not to know stuff, but it's a chance for growth. There's room for growth. It's not that you suck at it. You know, it's that this is a area of mine that I know is not a strength. I need to just work at it to get it better and get it to the level that you want to. You know, so again, it's those key little mindset shifts that we can make all along the way and really look at things as an opportunity. And I had to do this somewhere in the middle of my career here, where I kept chasing the almighty dollar up the ladder, jumping clinic to clinic to clinic. And I was making more money each time I changed jobs, but I hated it. I was miserable. I was like, this is not it, man. This is not the money is like secondary at this point. I don't even care. I just want to be happy, you know? And I think when I shifted my mindset to like, you know, oh, you know, this now this is happening, instead of like, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening for me? Right. And that mindset shift helped me see, oh, I had to learn this in order to get better here. So then eventually I stopped looking at the salary and I looked for a culture that I was happy with and that made me happy. Then I made the difference up in salary through doing my passion and the things that I truly loved. And man, I am living the dream right now. I love what I do. I love educating. I love, you know, helping people. And I love the world of physical therapy. And the impact I was going to have on the world of physical therapy was not going to be as only a 9-to-5 therapist seeing one-on-one patients. It just wasn't, you know? And I
think that's the thing to think about, right? When we talk about like leveraging what you get, right? Like look, I want to start by acknowledging, right, that like I get it. If you've graduated and you have a bunch of debt, right? I was there, totally understand, right? And a lot of people do. And then also understanding like nobody who's a professional wants to eat ramen noodle soup for dinner every night, right? Like that's not, right? Like that's not the, you expect to have some level of compensation where, you know, like I'm not, you know, I can afford to eat, right? But so I'm not saying, like, let's be clear. I'm not saying that. I'm thinking that you know, people need to understand like there's a certain level that like our profession should start at, right? That is commensurate with it. And I don't think it's where it is reflective of what it takes to get there, right? So but that's a whole nother conversation for another time. The part I'm interested in kind of expanding on with the listeners here today is that what you fail to always understand is that there's so many opportunities that you could take advantage of because of your degree, because of your skill set. But if you are just, like you said, always chasing something that doesn't quite make you happy, but sucks up all your energy, you have no energy left to do something that's interesting to you, that eventually might become lucrative, or you do two things that you really love and it works out better, right? Like, it doesn't, there's no requirement that you are tied to this, like, I must have this one job and do this one thing that I just despise. There's lots of opportunities, but you're never going to find it if you're always hemmed up and tied down because you don't pursue anything that you're passionate about, right? And I know that's easy for me to say at this point with all my gray hair to kind of say that, right? But to tell you that, like, you know, as a young clinician, right, I tried to go out and find, you know, other things to do, right? Like, I didn't make a lot of money as a young officer in the Army, right? And so, you know what, I'm going to go do some weekends. I'm going to moonlight. And you know what? I was just seeing outpatient ortho and I loved it, but maybe there was other things, right? So let me go see, like, maybe I'll do some wound care, right? And man, I did wound care for like 3 weekends and I realized like, no, this is not what I want to do. But man, I could have made a ton of money doing wound care, but I was not okay with it, right? So nope, that's not my pursuit. That's not what I want to do, right? But like you said, giving yourself the room to try things, to see, like, well, maybe I'd like this, maybe I wouldn't, like, maybe I'd like doing podcasts, maybe I don't, right? Maybe I want to do video content, maybe I can't stand doing that stuff, maybe I want to write, maybe I want to write a book, right? Maybe I want to, like, all these things are out there, right? And because your skill set as a DPT has prepared you in so many ways, all these things are available for you, right? Like, you could go out and pen a book today and your name starts with doctor. Your name, like, you're already ahead of most other people on that bookshelf because your name starts with doctor, right? You have something, right, that a lot of people don't. And if your passion becomes writing books, awesome, great. And if most people I know who write books say, they wrote 2 books, their first and their last, right? Yep. Because it was not, they found out this is not my passion, right? This is not. So, but they tried it. They gave themselves the room to try it. And I think that's important.
Yeah. I was an English major before I was a PT, so I love the book. I love the book pathway, and I'll continue to do that because I enjoy it so much. But neither here nor there. Drew, thank you so much, man, for your time and just sharing your life experiences and your thoughts on leverage in the profession. We ask all of our guests this one final question, and that question is, if you could change one aspect of higher education, whether it be DPT or otherwise, what aspect would you change and how would you change it?
You know what I would really want higher education to do? I would want higher education to pull people back in 10 years after they've graduated, to have these conversations with people who are sitting in those chairs, right? Because it is getting it from your professors is one thing,
Yeah.
right? Getting it from people who are out there doing it is different. And the most tumultuous time in your career, right, is that first 5 to 10 years, right? And I think that if you could pull people back to have the conversations, I think it would be very enlightening. Because the reality is, right, like my experience now is out of date with students, right? Like I can't relate to somebody 3 years out of practice, right? But at 10 years in my career, I still could, right? And I think that you could do that. And I would just say, like, I wish that higher education would find those reference points and pull them in to somehow weave it into the fabric of educating people so that they could have some other perspective about what it really takes to kind of thrive, right? And because it changes.
Yeah, I love that take. We need to start implementing the perspectives class,
There we
and
go. Let's add it to the curriculum.
have alumni, 5 year out, 10 year out, 20 year out, see what's relatable, see what's not, have it a two-way street so the students can kind of, let them know what they're going through right now and see if there's any room for growth that way or communication or networking. I mean, I like that idea a lot, and that's actually, for me, I try to still, I own my own business. And so I teach the business and admin course. And, I also have like a little bit of a mobile practice, but I still try to treat as well because I want to show my students that, hey, I'm still in the game. I'm still trying. I'm still learning. I don't think I'll ever stop learning, but it's learning the things that I love and I want to do, and that's where the difference was for me, I think, is really finding the fulfillment and the passion. So I love that takeaway. Well, Drew, thank you again so much for your time and for coming on and sharing your insights with us. Where can people find you on the interwebs or social media should they want to reach out or have any follow-up questions?
You could hit me up. My X or Twitter handle is at DC underscore PT. If any of your people want to reach out to me, you can get me at my APTA email address, drewcontreras@APTA.org. And I'm happy to entertain any questions people have.
Awesome. We'll put those in the show notes so you're easy to find. Drew, thank you so much, man. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Hello, everybody. Dr. F. Scott Field here, and we don't do this nearly enough. I wanted to thank you as an audience for being here, for listening to the shows. Without you guys, we wouldn't have anybody to geek out with over education and learning and teaching and educating. So thank you for being here, for being, faithful listeners over the years. Also, if possible, we'd love to ask a favor. We don't do this often, but if you could leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to this podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. It helps boost our rankings and our algorithm and really just helps get this message out to more people out there in healthcare education who may need, some of the episodes and the experts that we interview. So if you could, like I said, leave a rating and review, we would greatly appreciate it. And we will see you on the next show.